The topic of my talk today is Rose Breed 2, More Traits, Additional Crops, Expanded Germplasm, and New Science. And Rose Breed is a consortium of researchers funded by the Specialty Crop Research Initiative, and this is a slide that shows all the participating institutions, and the yellow identifies our team leaders for each crop. Cassandra Gassick's a team leader. She's here for Prunus. And Cameron Peace is my co-PD. And the title of our project is Rose Breed, Combining Disease Resistance with Horticultural Quality. So in my presentation, I'm going to begin by doing a quick overview of our first project, introducing our second project, and giving you some examples of current and future deliverables. So the title of our first project was Rose Breed, Enabling Marker-Assisted Breeding in the Rosaceae. Now the problem that project addressed was the fact that at the time there was a huge chasm between the available DNA information and what was used in breeding programs. The apple, diploid, strawberry, and peach genomes had been sequenced, but virtually no information was being used in breeding. And so the objective of Rose Breed 1 was to bridge that chasm. We started with just four crop groups, apple, peach, strawberry, and cherry, both the diploid sweet cherry and the tetraploid sour cherry. And we had a lot of catching up to do. Some of the outcomes and outputs of that program were the development and commercialization of four genome-wide genotyping arrays, an Illumina apple and pear array, a peach array, a strawberry array, and a cherry array, and also phenotyping protocols for each of the five crops. All of those are published, so I'm not going to spend time on that. But the outcome of that, this Rose Breed 1 project, was that DNA information use in U.S. breeding programs is now conventional, and this is a picture of how it's used in apple. By conventional, I mean more than 50% of the breeding programs are using DNA information in their breeding programs. But Rose Breed 1 focused on fruit quality. Rose Breed 2 focused on combining disease resistance with horticultural quality in new rosaceous crops. And here's the need addressed. Rosaceous cultivars must consistently exceed consumer expectations with satisfying appearance, aroma, flavor, market life, and texture, and also meet industry needs for durable disease resistance and productivity. And such cultivars have remained elusive despite breeders' best efforts. So crops targeted in Rose Breed 2 were expanded to include pear, rose, that is blackberry, which wasn't included in the project that Jill just discussed because guess what, it's a nasty polyploid and they didn't want to include it. So we picked it up, and then that root signifies the Prunus rootstocks that Ksenia and I work on. These are the disease threats targeted: apple scab, blue mold, fire blight, peach bacterial spot, brown rot, pear fire blight, our malaria root rot in Prunus, rose black spot, strawberry angular bacterial leaf spot, strawberry root and crown rots, cherry powdery mildew, and tart cherry leaf spot. Breeders were already working on these. They just didn't have any idea for most of them how the traits were inherited and how they were genetically controlled. And then these are the participating breeding programs. I'll let you look at this for a while. This is why we are essentially a community-wide project and have participants in all the major production areas of the U.S. So here are our objectives, very briefly. Number one, incorporate durable disease resistance in breeding parents. Number two, combine disease resistance and horticultural quality. Number three, advance selections with improved confidence. And that's based on the ability to predict phenotype from genotype. And number four, increase routine use of DNA information. And five is to utilize stakeholder input. For the sake of time, because I only have 12 minutes, I'm not going to go through this in detail. I just want to talk about some of the highlights. And our project started this year, so I don't have that much to represent. But what I want to show you here is A represents additional DNA tests for major effect alleles. The easy things we were able to do in Rosebreed 1 was taking advantage of those traits, important traits, that are controlled by major effect alleles, such as the MA locus and APLE. However, in Rosebreed 2, it's not just about major effect of alleles, which we call in our project jewels in the genome. It's about the necklace. It's about what chromosome they're on, what the genetic neighbors are of these major loci. And that's where the genome-wide breeding utility, the haploblocking, comes in. What is it linked to? And then, all large and small effect alleles. How can we handle that? And the strategy for that is a genome-wide selection that we heard in two talks prior. And then, oh gosh, you add the G by E, genotype by environment, and in the case management angle here. Because all those contribute to phenotype. All those make the total package. So this is a new stratosphere, genetically, we're heading to. Wish us luck. So let's start simple. These are the easy things. These are the additional DNA tests for major effects allele. We use a pedigree-based approach because you can discover and validate in the same genetic experiment. And if anybody wants some information on that, I can point you to the literature on that. But that is a key. The other thing is, then we go DNA test development, marker assisted parent selection, marker assisted seedling selection. It's a design approach based on knowledge of the phenotypes contributed by these major effect alleles. But once again, those major effect alleles are what in our program we call the jewels in the genome, but what about the necklace? What's linked to it? Well, haploblocking is an approach where you divide each chromosome into segments that are recombining in historical and selected germplasm. And so these haploblocks, you can assign to each haploblock a value based on the traits that map there. If you're using wild germplasm like we are in disease resistance, you can also get some clues about whether that haplotype for that haploblock is overrepresented. Wow, maybe there's something good about it. Neutral. Or underrepresented, maybe there's something bad about that. So we have a team led by Amy Rotten-Raw at Clemson looking at haploblocking to help breeders put the necklace together because we have genome-wide genotyping capabilities, and as we have knowledge of the value of different genetic regions, this is again contributes to the design approach, putting the haploblocks together like a Lego exercise. Can't control where recombination is yet, but if we could, that's a missing piece here. Then all large and small effect alleles. This is where the genome-wide selection comes in, and this is a predictive approach that we heard from the earlier speaker, where genome-wide DNA markers are used to predict the best performing individual as parents that existed in the population. We're experimenting with this with Apple, with Jim Luby, Peach with Ksenia Gasek, Cherry with Ndozi Oruguzi at Washington State, and then Strawberry, which is our allo-octoploid member of our project, and that's Vance Whitaker's lead. And Rex Bernardo has joined our program to help us with this. Genotype by environment interaction. Gosh. You can't plant the same clonal variety of everything for our fruit crops all over the place. It's not like you can send seed packets to your colleagues. So how do you get G by E when you cannot replicate genotypes? Well, you can replicate part of the genotype based on ancestry and shared genetics. So this is the strategy behind how we're tackling the G by E. Phenotypic data from multiple locations combined using relationships estimated from DNA markers to improve accuracy of predictions in target environments. So we're not clonally replicating, but we've got Craig Hartner, a statistical geneticist, taking advantage of the genetic data to show if you have this piece of DNA in this environment, we predict that this is its phenotype. Rosebreed 2, examples of year one to date highlights. I'll go through this quickly. Mostly, a lot of our emphasis is on phenotyping, and I want to highlight this with Kelly Ivers doing the disease screening in California, taking advantage of germplasm from Jim Hancock and Chad Finn. Once again, large phenotyping efforts for scab, fire blight, and blue mold. The good news is we have sources of resistance to phenotype. We just need to understand the genetics and have some DNA tools to manage these inbreeding programs. And obviously, to come up with a disease-resistant donor that have these resistances is well stacked. If I had all the resistances I needed to a disease stacked in one cultivar, I would only have to make one cross to get all those disease resistances. I don't have to cross to that parent, then that parent, then that parent. So having these publicly available disease-resistant donors will be a huge benefit. And Jay, of course, at USDA is using rapid cycling technology, which is going to be important in apple. And then post-harvest diseases, gosh, we found that we did need in certain cases to really ramp up our phenotyping. And an exhausted Ksenia will tell you about how this is going this summer. It's been a nightmare, but they're going to get really good genetic data, phenotypic data. And then, of course, as Jill mentioned, we're exploiting shared ancestry for those crops for which we don't have as much genetic data. Can we take genetic shortcuts based on knowledge of where trait loci have landed in crop relatives? Dory Main's ahead of that. So we do have DNA tests now. Most of these are those easy to find initial DNA tests. But I want to spend some time on outreach and how we actually make a difference and are structured in Rosebreed to actually make a difference. We have, of course, a community breeder page that talks about how you can use DNA diagnostics in your breeding program. We have a DNA testing portal. And then most importantly, we have how-to knowledge of how to do this, and Cameron Peace is a lead on this, and he's got some super team members. We've got a DNA testing brochure. You can actually, people can look at the web, but you can actually, we have things you can hand things to people. And I want to show you the inside of this brochure because it tells you who to contact if you want to do this, what the price will be, what tests are available, what your results would look like. And so you can actually have all the information you need to do it is available in this brochure. And I want to show you in the brochure this example because this is for maturity date. And I like this example because it's not like, is it a nectarine or peach? We can do that genetic test. But this actually explains to a potential user how you could shift the mean based on using a DNA test. Because this is a new concept to some breeders. It's easy for them to adopt. It's either sick or not. It's either resistant or not. But are they willing to do a DNA test to shift a mean? And so this gives you the confidence of how predictive those haplotypes are of what your future population will look like. So just to summarize the pedigree of Rosebreed, we've got the germplasm for the disease-resistant fruit quality thanks to the strength of our participating breeding programs. Got traditional genetics involved in cultivar development pipeline. So we've got the jewels. We're putting the necklace together with the haplotype, and I want to acknowledge our international collaborators. We've got folks from all over the world and advanced research with genomics research and new strategies we're trying. And the goal is enhanced breeding efficiency, accuracy, speed, and creativity. And here's acknowledgments of our participants, including many of our advisory panel members. And with that, I'll answer any questions. And I do have hard copies of the brochure, and Paul Sandifer, and Paul, raise your hand, Paul is part of the team in Cameron's group that helped put together some of these DNA test cards. So if you'd like a copy, I have a limited number, and Paul is actually in the development team. So thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Iovine. We don't have any time for questions right now, so if we could get the next speaker up. Thank you very much.